Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Aram Goldar, and today Maseches Baba Kama, Daf Kuf Hey, the ninth parak of Gozel Eitzim. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, Rabba taught if someone stole three bundles worth three prutos, and they decreased to a total value of two prutos, and we returned two of them, he must still return the other one despite being worth less than a pruta, since it had a pruta's value when it was stolen. This is supported from a mission teaching that if one stole chametz and Pesach passed over it so it's now prohibited in benefit, he may return it to the victim. This implies that if it was not extant, came to mikar mamonu by shumai, since originally it had monetary value, he must pay its original value even though it is currently worthless. Here too, since the bundle was originally worth a pruta, he must pay for it or return it if it's extant. Rabbi asked, if one stole two bundles jointly with a pruta and returned one, what's the halacha? Is he patur from returning it since he does not have a stolen item worth a pruta? Or do we say he has not returned anything since what he returned was worth less than a pruta? He concludes, even though there's no robbed item here, mitzvah hashava enkan, there's no fulfillment of the mitzvah of returning a stolen item. Point number two, Rava asked, Nishba Olav Mahu, if one swore falsely about having stolen chametz, which had become forbidden in benefit, what is the halacha? Do we say since if it would be stolen from him, he would have to pay its original value, it is considered denying a monetary liability? Or do we say that since the chametz is here and can be returned in its worthless form, it is not a monetary denial? Rava was certain of the answer to this question. If one says to another, you stole my ox, and the defendant denies it and explains that he's holding the ox as a shomer chinam, and falsely swears so, he is liable for a karban asham, shripata atzma b'gneva v'aveda, because he exempted himself from liability for theft or loss of the ox by swearing falsely that he was a shomer chinam and not a thief. Although the ox is currently in his possession, and he's not denied an actual obligation, since if it would be stolen, his oath would exempt him, he's liable for an asham. The same would apply to denying having stolen chametz. And point number three, Rav Sheshet said, a kofer bebikadon, one who falsely denies having a deposit in his possession. Nasal of guzlan, he has become a guzlan through his denial, even without swearing. V'chai ba'onsim, and he's liable for unavoidable mishaps which befall it. Rami Bar Chama challenged him from a mission which lists someone who swore falsely to deny a pikadon as someone who is chashud al hashvua, suspect in regard to oaths. According to Rav Sheshet, he's considered a gazlan who's disqualified from swearing through his mere denial, even without swearing. The Gemara answers the Mishnah's case is where the pikadon was in a swamp, and his denial was not to steal it, but to stall for time until he retrieves it. When he denies a pikadon in his possession, he is immediately considered a gazlan. Ravidi Bar Avin's ruling proves this distinction. Hakofer b'milva kasha le'edus, one who denies owing a loan is still qualified for giving testimony, since he may be stalling for time to repay the spent money. Pikadon pasul le'edus, but for falsely denying holding a deposit, he is disqualified for testimony since it's in his possession. So once again, the 3 points are number one. Rava taught if someone stole three bundles worth three prutos, and they decreased to a total value of two prutos, and he returned two of them, he must still return the other one despite being worth less than a pruta, since it had a pruta's value when it was stolen. This is supported from a mission teaching that if one stole chametz and Pesach passed over it so it's now prohibited in benefit, he may return it to the victim. This implies that if it was not extant, came to mikar mamonu by shumai, since originally it had monetary value, he must pay its original value even though it is currently worthless. Here too, since the bundle was originally worth a pruta, he must pay for it or return it if it's extant. Rava asked, if one stole two bundles jointly with a pruta and returned one, what's the halacha? Is he patur from returning it since he does not have a stolen item worth a pruta? Or do we say he has not returned anything since what he returned was worth less than a pruta? He concludes, afu pisha gazela enkan, even though there's no robbed item here, mitzvah hashava enkan, there's no fulfillment of the mitzvah of returning a stolen item. Point number two, Rava asked, Nishba Olav Mahu, if one swore falsely about having stolen chametz, which had become forbidden in benefit, what is the halacha? Do we say since if it would be stolen from him, he would have to pay its original value, it is considered denying a monetary liability? Or do we say that since the chametz is here and can be returned in its worthless form, it is not a monetary denial? Rava was certain of the answer to this question. If one says to another, you stole my ox, and the defendant denies it and explains that he's holding the ox as a shomer chinam, and falsely swears so, he is liable for a karban asham, shripata atzma b'gneva v'aveda, because he exempted himself from liability for theft or loss of the ox by swearing falsely that he was a shomer chinam and not a thief. Although the ox is currently in his possession, and he's not denied an actual obligation, since if it would be stolen, his oath would exempt him, he's liable for an asham. The same would apply to denying having stolen chametz. And point number three, Rav Shesha said, a kofer bibikadon, one who falsely denies having a deposit in his possession. Natsal of guzlan, he has become a guzlan through his denial, even without swearing. V'chai ba'onsim, and he's liable for unavoidable mishaps which befall it. Rami Bar Chama challenged him from a mission which lists someone who swore falsely to deny a pikadon as someone who is chashud al hashvua, suspect in regard to oaths. According to Rav Sheshes, he's considered a gazlan who's disqualified from swearing through his mere denial, even without swearing. The Gemara answers that the Mishnah's case is where the pikadon was in a swamp, and his denial was not to steal it, but to stall for time until he retrieves it. When he denies a pikadon in his possession, he is immediately considered a gazlan. Rav Yehuda Bar Avin's ruling proves this distinction. Hakofer b'milva kashul eidus, one who denies owing a loan is still qualified for giving testimony, since he may be stalling for time to repay the spent money. Pikadon pasul eidus, but for falsely denying holding a deposit, he is disqualified for testimony since it's in his possession. All right, so now we go to Siman Daf Kuf Hey, and our standard Siman is a hacker. We just reverse the letters, and we use a Russian hacker to make the Siman a little more distinct. So here goes. The Russian who hacked into the thief's computer and discovered that he had stolen three bundles worth three prutos, which decreased in value to two prutos, and had only returned two of them, and found a picture of the thief swearing falsely about having stolen chametz after it became asur b'hanah, realized by hacking into a security camera that the reason he swore falsely to deny pikadon was to stall for time and retrieve it from a swamp. Once again, slow motion. The Russian who hacked, a Russian who hacked, a Russian hacker? That must be one duff. Kuf hey. The Russian who hacked into the thief's computer and discovered that he had stolen three bundles worth three prutos, which decreased in value to two prutos, and had only returned two of them, which reminds us, Rava taught, if someone stole three bundles worth three prutos, and they decreased to a total value of two prutos, and he returned two of them, he must still return the other one despite being worth less than a pruta, since it had a pruta's value when it was stolen. So the Russian who hacked into the thief's computer and discovered that he had stolen three bundles worth three prutos, which decreased in value to two prutos, and had only returned two of them, and found a picture of the thief swearing falsely about having stolen chametz after it became asur b'hanah, which reminds us, Rava asked, Nishba lav ma, if one swore falsely about having stolen chametz, which had become asur b'hanah, what is the lach? Do we say since if it would be stolen from him, he would have to pay its original value, and therefore it's considered denying a monetary liability? Or do we say that since the chametz is here and can be returned in its worthless form, it is not a monetary denial? So the Russian who hacked into the thief's computer and discovered that he had stolen three bundles worth three prutos, which decreased in value to two prutos, and had only returned two of them, and found a picture of the thief swearing falsely about having stolen chametz after it became asur b'hanah, realized by hacking into a security camera that the reason he swore falsely to deny pikadon was to stall for time and retrieve it from a swamp. Which reminds us, Rav Shesha said, a kofer bibikadon, one who falsely denies having a deposit in his possession, natsal of guzlan, he's become a guzlan through his denial, even without swearing, v'chai ba'onsin, he's chayiv for unavoidable mishaps which befall it. Rami Bar Chama challenged him from a mission which lists someone who swore falsely to deny pikadon as someone who is chashud al shvu, a suspect in regard to oaths. According to Rav Shesha, he's considered a guzlan who's disqualified from swearing through his mere denial, even without swearing. The Gemara answers that the Mishnah's case is where the pikadon was in a swamp, and his denial was not to steal it, but to stall for time until he retrieves it. When he denies a pikadon in his possession, he is immediately considered a guzlan. So once again, the Russian who hacked into the thief's computer and discovered that he had stolen three bundles worth three prutos, which decreased in value to two prutos, and had only returned two of them, and found a picture of the thief swearing falsely about having stolen chametz after it became asur b'hanah, realized by hacking into a security camera that the reason he swore falsely to deny pikadon was to stall for time and retrieve it from a swamp. All right, so now it's time for four blah back Hazara. Daf Kuf Alf. So the siman Daf Kuf Alf is a bird caller that goes ka ka. So here goes. The bird caller, that must be more in Daf Kuf Alf, a bird caller who goes ka ka. The bird caller who blew his whistle as two birds held up his stolen sweater to see if the stolen dye was still present in it, which reminds us. The Gemara asks a question. Yesh shevach samanim al hatzemer, is the improvement of dye on the wool considered something material or not? Rashi explains the question is if chazusa milsi, appearance, is a significant matter, making the dye still considered present. Since stolen dye must be returned, the case must be where one stole wool and dye belonging to the same person, and he dyed the wool with it and then returned the dyed wool. If yesh shevach samanim al gabi tzemer, the dye is still considered present, he has returned everything he stole, but if not, he must pay for the stolen dye. So the bird called Hubu's whistle as two birds held up his stolen sweater to see if the stolen dye was still present in it, had a jacket that had been dyed with the peels of orla fruit set afire, because chazusa milsihi, which reminds us it was stated in the Mishnah Beged Shetzvo Beklipe Orla Yedalek, a garment which was dyed with the peels of orla fruit should be set afire. This proves chazusa milsihi appearance is considered a significant matter, and the orla is still considered present. So the bird called Hubu's whistle as two birds held up a stolen sweater to see if the stolen dye was still present in it, had a jacket that had been dyed with the peels of orla fruit set afire, because chazusa milsihi, using wood which has no kedusha shviz, since its benefit is after its consumption, which reminds us, the Gemara deals with the question if wood is subject to kedusha shviz, and answers that the pasuk says la'achla, to eat, teaching b'misha nasa ubi'iro shavin. Kedusha shviz applies to produce whose benefit and consumption coincide, like food. This excludes wood, whose benefit, the baking, is after its consumption, meaning after the wood is reduced to coals. Daf Kuf Beis. So the Simur Daf Kuf Beis is a cave. So here goes. The man who lived in a cave. Cave? That must be on Daf Kuf Beis. The man who lived in a cave, busy soaking flax in a pool of juice of Shemitah produce, picked specifically for that purpose, which reminds us, the Gemara brings a Malchokas Anayim if Shemitah produce may be used for soaking flax or laundering if it was picked for that purpose. So the man who lived in a cave, busy soaking flax in a pool of juice of Shemitah produce, picked specifically for that purpose, who had been disappointed when the shlich he sent to purchase wheat returned with barley, which reminds us, a brisa teaches that if someone gave a shlich money to buy wheat to sell at a higher price and split the profits, and instead the shlich bought barley or the reverse, in b'chasu b'chasu lo, if they depreciated, they depreciated for the shlich, v'mosiro hosiro lo, and if they appreciate it, they appreciate it for him, meaning the shlich takes all losses and gains and repays the investor's capital. Another brisa says they divide the profits, but the shlich takes all losses. Rabbi Yochanan explains that the first brisa is Rabbi Meir, who taught on Daf Kuf Amud Beis regarding dyeing wool the wrong color, that one who deviates from instructions is deemed a gazlan. Therefore, this shlich acquires the produce with the stolen money. So the man who lived in a cave, busy soaking flax in a pool of juice of Shemitah produce, picked specifically for that purpose, who had been disappointed when the shlich he sent to purchase wheat returned with barley, was happy to learn that his other shlich carried out his shlichas as instructed and purchased wheat, as he was considered like the investor himself, which reminds us, in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they mocked Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation that the second brisa is also discussing a significant deviation from his instructions. According to Rabbi Yehuda, how does the investor acquire a share of the grain when the shlich disobeyed him, who informed the owner of the wheat that he should transfer wheat to the owner of the money instead of the shlich? Rav Shmuel Bar Sosrati challenges reasoning, arguing that even when a shlich purchases wheat as he was told, no one informed the seller to transfer wheat to the investor. Rav Yavo answered that when he purchased wheat as he was told, he performed his shlichus, and it's considered like the baal bais, the investor himself, so he may perform a transaction on the investor's behalf. Daf Kuf Gimel, so the Simur Daf Kuf Gimel is Kugel, and we use Yerushalmi Kugel. So here goes. The land seller enjoying his Yerushalmi Kugel, that must learn Daf Kuf Gimel. The land seller enjoying his Yerushalmi Kugel, while refusing to write a second shtar for the buyer who falsely claimed that he bought the field on the Reish Kulus's behalf, which reminds us, if a buyer declared untruthfully that he bought a field on the Reish Kulus's behalf to discourage potential protesters, we do not force the seller to sell it a second time, meaning he doesn't have to write him another document identifying him as a true owner. Although the buyer can argue that the seller understood that he only claimed to purchase for the Reish Galusa as a security measure and realized the buyer wanted a second shtar, the seller can respond that he thought the buyer arranged with the Reish Galusa to write a shtar for him. So the land seller enjoying his Yerushalmi Kugel while refusing to write a second shtar for the buyer who falsely claimed that he bought the field on the Reish Galusa's behalf, packed up some kugel for the gazlan on his way to Madai to bring payment to the victim after he had sworn falsely and only later confessed, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Hagozel es chavero shava pruta, one who robs from his fellow the value of a pruta, v'nishbolo, and then he swears falsely to him, denying the robbery, but later confesses and is chayv to pay the principal and an additional fifth and bring a karban hashem, yolechenu akarav afil l'madai, he must bring the payment after him even to Madai. He cannot give it to the victim's son nor to his own shaliach, but he may give it to a shliach basin, which is a takana enacted to encourage his repentance. So the land seller enjoying his Yerushalmi Kugel while refusing to write a second shtar for the buyer who falsely claimed that he bought a field on the Reish Galusa's behalf, packed up some kugel for the gazlan on his way to Madai to bring payment to the victim after he had sworn falsely, and only later confessed, and served kugel to the five people waiting to be paid by the thief who stole from one of them but did not remember who, which reminds us, it was taught in the Mishnah, Gazla Echad Mechamisha, one who robbed one of five people, Ve'eni Yedei Eiz Mehen, but he doesn't know which one of them it was, and each of them claims it was he. Rabbi Tarfon says, Meniach Gezeira Benehu Mistalik, he places the robbed item between them and removes himself. Rabbi Kiva says, this is not the derech to remove him from Avera. Ad she yeshalom gezeira kol echad ve'echad. He has not fulfilled his obligation until he pays the robbed item's value to every one of them. Daf Kuf Dalet. So the Siman Daf Kuf Dalet is a code. So here goes. The code breaker who successfully deciphered that a debtor should pay his debt to the creditor Shaliach, who was A.W. Ayin, appointed with the Aidim, which reminds us, the Gemara discusses a Shaliach, which the creditor appointed with Aidim to collect his debt. Rav Chisda says, Havi Shaliach, he's a legal Shaliach, and the debtor is absolved of his debt after giving him the money, even if it never reaches his creditor. Rav says he's not a legal Shaliach, since the creditor never instructed the debtor to give him the money. So the codebreaker who successfully deciphered that a debtor should pay his debt to the creditor Shaliach, who was A.W. Ayin, appointed with Aidim, but that a Shomer should not send money back for the depositor with someone who only has a symbol proving he's the owner Shaliach, which reminds us, Rav Yehuda quoted Shmuel, Ein Mishalchim Maos B'diokani. A Shomer should not send money back for the depositor with someone who only has a symbol proving he's the owner Shaliach. Bafil Edim Chasum Moleh, even if Edim are signed on the symbol as authentic, because this symbol does not prove he was appointed a Shaliach to retrieve it. Rabbi Yochanan said that if Edim are signed on it, he is established as a Shaliach and one may send the money with him. So the codebreaker who successfully deciphered that a debtor should pay his debt to the creditor Shaliach, who was A.W. Ayin, appointed with Edim, but that a Shomer should not send money back for the depositor with someone who only has a symbol proving he's the owner Shaliach, was overjoyed when he figured out the code Chomesh equals Mamun means that if a Gazlan died after only paying the victim, the principal is heirs. Must pay the Chomesh, which reminds us, the Mishnah taught that if a Gazlan repaid the stolen principal but not the additional fifth, he does not need to bring it to the victim. The Gemara infers that it is still owed. Almo Chomesh Mamonuhu. We see that the additional fifth payment is a monetary obligation to the victim, and not just for atonement. And if the Gazlan would die, his heirs would still owe it. Alright, so now it's time to conclude the pop quiz of 10 questions. Number 1. Which shaftim learn that one who robs someone of something worth a Shavapruta, who swears and later confesses, must return the item afilu l'madai, that's on Dav? Kuf Gimel, good. Number 2. Which of the one that one must return a remaining bundle from a group of 3 bundles, even though it's now worth less than a pruta, that's on Dav? Kuf Hey, good. Number 3. Which of the one a Shomer should not send money back for the depositor with someone who only has a symbol proving he's the owner Shaliach, that's on Dav? Kuf Dal, good. Number 4. Which of the one the Reb Meir holds of Din Garmi obligating payment in certain cases of indirect damage, that's on Dav? Kuf. Good. Number 5. Which stuff do you discuss what the din is when one swears he did not steal chametz, which is now worthless? That's on Dav. Kuf. Hey. Good. Number 6. Which stuff do you have a case where a woman gave a craftsman some gold and asked him to make a ring for her and she'll become married to him? That's on Dav. Tzadi test. Good. Number 7. Which stuff do you learn that chomesh havi mamona, the additional fifth payment, is a monetary obligation of the victim, and if the gazlan dies, the heirs must pay it? That's on Dav. Kuf Dalet. Good. Number 8. Which of the case where one denies a pikadon in his possession to stall for time so he can retrieve it from a swamp? That's on Dav. Kuf Hey. Good. Number 9. Which daf do we have machlokas? What is done if a gazlan robs someone from a group of 5 and can't remember who it was? That's on Dav. Kuf Gimel. Good. Number 10. Which daf do we have machlokas if Shemitah produce can be used to soak flax if it was specifically picked for that purpose? That's on Dav. Kuf Beis. Excellent. That concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldhar from Zichu Vishnira. Great day and great learning.